All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Live once again on your radios and your social media feeds on this Thursday, November 17th. Good to be back from a post-election break. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense for this Thursday, where we are in the low 20s on Lake Wasota. We have snow on the roads, snow showers stretching from New York to Idaho, from Kentucky to Colorado. Just a big area of snow, so nothing that you're going to be able to escape anytime soon, so please drive carefully out there. Coming up this morning, State Senator Melissa Agard, the new Democratic leader in the Wisconsin State Senate. We'll talk about plans now that the election is over and whether they and Governor Evers can work with legislative Republicans, even as Republicans continue to talk about, you know, extreme positions and outright obstruction. We'll also talk a bit more about the Packers. They've got a game tonight playing the Tennessee Titans at Lambeau Field. The game is on Amazon Prime. It'll only be on regular TV in the Green Bay and Milwaukee markets. Yesterday marked a great big victory for Senator Tammy Baldwin and a great big victory for advocates of same-sex and interracial marriage, as the Respect for Marriage Act cleared a major hurdle in the Senate after getting enough votes from Senate Republicans. This is something that Senator Baldwin and several Republicans, Susan Collins of Maine, Rob Portman from Ohio, Tom Tillis from North Carolina, they've all been involved in. To basically, codify the marriage protections that have been granted in the past by the U.S. Supreme Court for same-sex marriage. It was in the Obergefell decision. But now that we've seen what this current Supreme Court, made up of right-wing politicians in judges' robes, will do to repeal abortion rights, naturally, people are concerned that the same thing could happen to marriage rights. And it's something that Senator Baldwin talked about on the Senate floor yesterday, addressing critics, including Ron Johnson and Wisconsin Congressman Tom Tiffany and others, who said that, you know, the bringing this up was all about division. Oh, no, as Senator Baldwin makes clear, the division is already out there by those who want to pull back marriage rights. And that's why they need to be enshrined in federal law.
I believe that there is an urgency to pass the Respect for Marriage Act in order to heal such divisions and provide certainty to married, interracial, and same-sex couples that the protections, rights, and responsibilities that flow from their marriages will endure. The Supreme Court should not be in a position to undermine the stability of families with a stroke of the pen. So now Congress must act. And Congress is acting with a full-throated endorsement from the American people. More than 70% of Americans support marriage equality, including a majority of Democrats, Republicans, and Independents. This legislation unites Americans. With the Respect for Marriage Act, we can ease the fear that millions of same-sex and interracial couples have that their freedoms and their rights could be stripped away. By passing this bill, we are guaranteeing same-sex and interracial couples, regardless of where they live, that their marriage is legal and that they will continue to enjoy the rights and responsibilities that all other marriages are afforded. And this will give millions of loving couples the certainty, the dignity, and the respect that they need and that they deserve.
And Senator Baldwin went on to say in her remarks that this is not just about, you know, a wedding ceremony. A lot of people kind of trivialize this and say, well, this is just so you can say you're married. No. She explains that, you know, marriage comes with a huge amount of legal rights, and that same-sex couples without that protection don't have sometimes those legal rights when it comes to parent-teacher conferences, estate planning, health insurance coverage, hospital or nursing home visitation. And to those who would say, again, there's no rush, there's not currently a case, she notes, as we all have noticed with this current court, they use something called the shadow docket that basically rushes cases and allows them to make decisions pretty much in the shadows, in secret, with very little argument, with very little of the customs, norms, procedures that the U.S. Supreme Court has normally had in these instances. So you don't need to wait for a case to come up before Clarence Thomas and some of the other right-wing justices could rush something along. And so instead, Tammy Baldwin and others said it's time to provide that certainty, that dignity, and that respect. Now, again, it cleared yesterday's procedural vote, which helped it overcome a filibuster, because 12 Republicans joined in and helped provide the votes to get past the filibuster. So Ron Johnson and the others who are against it can't filibuster it now. It'll come up for a final vote. It'll then go to the House of Representatives, which passed an earlier version, but now needs to vote on this revised Senate version, where Brian Steil was the only Republican to support it last time around. But it will eventually pass, and marriage equality will finally be enshrined in federal law, thanks to Tammy Baldwin and some friends. Senator Melissa Agard next. This is Up North News Radio. Welcome back. It's 7:15. This is Up North News Radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow, along with State Senator Melissa Agard from Madison, the new Senate Democratic leader, minority leader of the state Senate. When the new session begins come January, Senator Agard, good morning.
Good morning. How are you this morning, Pat?
Thank you. Well, thanks. Back from a little post-election break, which I'm guessing you haven't been able to take yet, and hopefully there's one in your plans.
My calendar's pretty booked for the next, week or two. And then I start seeing some light. I think that I'm going to take your lead and mark some time off for some personal R&R. We know we can't roll up our sleeves and take care of the community if we're not putting ourselves in there at some point.
That's right. And I'm going to start actually not in the Senate, but in the Assembly, simply because you talked about being able to take time off, being able to let your guard down. And something that I read is just so indicative of where I think we still are with Republicans in the legislature that I just wanted to bring it to folks' attention. Now, Republicans did end up winning a 2/3 majority in the state Senate, but they fell short in the Assembly, so they technically can't override a veto from Governor Evers. But they have now indicated that they're willing to play games, and that if at some point during the upcoming session, three Assembly Dems are absent, and if all the Republicans show up, they might try to jam through some veto override attempts, which, again, it's not that they can't do it, but it was traditionally not done because people were traditionally decent human beings. Well, that's my opinion of it. I just wanted to ask about, we talk about being able to let your guard down, take some time off. And for Democrats, it feels like you're not going to get to do that if these are the reindeer games that Republicans are going to play with you.
Yeah, it's really not the Wisconsin way. You know, our state has really been built on a heritage of people who help each other out, right? Back in the day, building barns, to this day, still, I'm hoping that people are baking casseroles for their friends and neighbors. I know I've got homemade soup in my freezer that I share with folks when, they are in need. And I think that we should be carrying those same values into our government. And only under the most extreme circumstances should something like that be considered. But before we've even gone down the chute, we haven't even had inauguration yet. We have the same governor that we've had for the last 4 years. He's salt of the earth and very earnest and very communicative about what it is that he's going to do. And clearly the people of Wisconsin voted for that type of leadership. And despite the fact that we were told there was going to be a red wave, not only across Wisconsin, but across our nation, we did not see that. It's really unfortunate that Republicans in the Wisconsin state legislature feel like the way they can get ahead is by changing the rules or bending the rules in their best interest, as opposed to working in the best interest of people all across the state of Wisconsin. So frankly, I am hopeful that people in our state are paying attention to how it is that they're setting the table and calling them out on it before they start making their moves.
Now, the main business of the next session, as it is every other year, is writing a state budget for the two-year period that follows. At the same time, the state is dealing with, not dealing with, but is enjoying the problem of a record budget surplus of some $5 billion, in large part because of Governor Evers' stewardship of the economy through a pandemic. And, you know, the way that businesses and individuals were able to stay afloat and by staying in business, you know, help to generate that surplus. Governor Evers has put forward a plan that would allow for, you know, tax cuts as well as targeted investment. Republicans sat on the surplus all year long, hoping Tim Michaels would get elected and they could turn all that into, you know, just tax cuts. Your Senate counterpart, Devin LeMahieu, the Republican leader, was making noises over the weekend, you know, again, about wanting to pursue a flat tax as kind of a primary fiscal plan. Tell folks why that's not the right approach as you get into what you ultimately think can be done by Republicans, Evers, and legislative Democrats working on that surplus.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, if the Republicans and the legislature again are going to play games, and that frankly, when they talk about wanting to spend their time and energy and the tax dollars of the state of Wisconsin on passing or moving forward policy in regards to a flat tax, we know that Governor Evers isn't going to support that. And it will be a non-starter. At the same time, yes, it is a budget season for the state of Wisconsin. We know that the best budgets are written when you have people who come together and there's give and take, when there's collaborative efforts and there's compromise. But unfortunately, in the last decade of Republican rule in the Wisconsin legislature, it seems that my colleagues on that side of the aisle have lost the ability to know what compromise is. And, you know, I suggest they go to an elementary school playground and look at how those kids are interacting with each other because they do a better job learning how to compromise on how to share the toys on those playgrounds. Certainly, we need to bring that close to $5 billion surplus back into our communities all across the state of Wisconsin. And one of the things that I believe that we need to prioritize, not only within this budget, but also with that surplus, is supporting our local governments, whether it's our town boards, our city councils, our county boards, our school boards. Our local governments have been strangled by the levy limits that were imposed by Governor Walker under his rule. I don't even know if I can call it leadership of the state of Wisconsin. And we saw a record number of unprecedented referendums all across the state of Wisconsin by local governments simply for operating budgets, so that they can pay their police officers, so they can pay their EMTs, and so they can pay their firefighters. So they can make sure that the roads are plowed in the winter and that people are safe in their communities. So for a party that has had the reins in the legislature for as long as they have, and as they campaigned around the state of Wisconsin for the last 6 months or so, saying that they are the party of local control and that they are the party of public safety, this is how it is that they can actually show that, because in fact, they have not been honoring local control and they have been strangling public safety for our communities. So let's put those dollars back to work for the state of Wisconsin. And at the same time, I very much believe that we have enough money that we can invest in tax relief for hardworking people all across the state of Wisconsin, not just the wealthy and well-connected.
The new state Senate Democratic leader, Melissa Agar, joins us on Up North News Radio, talking about the next session now that the election is behind us. Again, some of the things that Republicans were saying involved what in my interpretation is maybe hostage taking is too strong to go, because again, you're going to have to reach agreement on something. But the way that I heard it was, well, we'll let, you know, public schools get some more funding, some more support from the surplus, but only if you also allow us to use some of it to continue to fund two parallel education systems in Wisconsin by, you know, giving more money to private schools that consistently show that they're not any better than public schools in terms of performance, and certainly not as good in terms of accountability. So I guess to ask it directly, do you feel like that may have to be where this goes, is to get public school support from Republicans? They're not going to allow that unless private schools get a bigger bite of the apple than they already get.
Well, you know, I think that one of the things, Pat, that you know from your time in the Capitol, is that there are really loud voices out there, but those loud voices don't necessarily match up with what the majority of the people of the state of Wisconsin are asking for. And I know in Wisconsin that we have always prided ourselves on having a strong and really effective public school system. You know, we were the first state that had kindergarten in it, for gosh sakes. We have an amazing technical school system and an amazing four-year college system. And, you know, we really value people being able to not only from itty bitties, babies, being able to be cared for so that their parents can go to work and know that their development is going to be nurtured in the best way that it can, all the way up to folks that are looking for career changes, that we have the best public system for education so that people can achieve their dreams. And it is really, I think, a bad investment for the state of Wisconsin when we aren't investing in and supporting our public school system from zero to people wanting to take a different path with their career. When that is struggling, when we are not taking care of it and nurturing it in the way that we should, to be investing money into unaccountable and private school systems, that's not going to help Wisconsin go forward. Right now in the state of Wisconsin, one of our most successful exports happens to be very heartbreaking. It happens to be our young people. The amount of brain drain that is leaving the state of Wisconsin right now is absolutely egregious. And I don't know about you and your listeners, but I'm a mom of four. And my oldest son has decided to take up residence in New York State as opposed to here in Wisconsin. After, you know, we invested in him in his public school education, you know, all the way through the University of Wisconsin. And if we're going to be a state that continues to move forward, if we're going to be a state that supports our Main Street businesses and our tech industries, we need those young people to be staying here. Every business owner that I have talked to has talked to me about how it is that they are having a hard time finding the right people for the jobs. Employee retention and recruitment is a real challenge in the state of Wisconsin. Well, folks, if we invest in our public school systems, we're going to be able to address that. And if we make sure that we carry the values of what Wisconsinites raise their kids to believe in, they're going to continue to want to call Wisconsin home. But what we're telling our kids is not what is happening in the Capitol building, and it's causing a real disconnect. And it's very concerning for me for the future of Wisconsin. So we're going to fight like hell for our public schools.
And then one last thing that Assembly Speaker Voss has indicated, and I'm sure Senator Lemahieu will go along with as well if Republicans insist on it, is that before they allow any exception for rape and incest in an abortion ban, that women will first have to, you know, be required to get a police report, you know, an exam, everything else intrusive that comes with it. What are your thoughts on whether that constitutes a compromise?
There is no compromise when it comes to reproductive healths and freedoms. It is absolutely imperative that everyone has the ability to go to their doctor's office and not bring along the police department and their politicians and the court system. There cannot be any exemptions in the sense that Speaker Voss is. People have spoken not only in Wisconsin, but also across the nation, that reproductive health freedoms need to be protected. And we must absolutely ensure that the 1849 abortion ban is repealed in the state of Wisconsin. And I am so glad that Josh Call was reelected to be our attorney general in Wisconsin. And he is leading on a court case that will clarify this for us.
It does make me wonder if, again, for a group that often says that non-fiscal things shouldn't be in the budget, if that's something they're going to work on separately or try to jam in the budget to try to force something. I don't know. Maybe that's even too far even for them.
Yeah, well, we know Congressman Pocan is wonderful at magic tricks, but it seems like my colleagues on the other side of the aisle are trying to learn to be magicians. And we need to watch with great detail what it is that they are doing. Because, folks, legislating is not about talking points and sound bites. Legislating is about all the work that is happening and the earnestness that people bring to the table.
Senate Democratic Leader Melissa Agard from Madison, so great to talk to you. Congratulations. And I'm sure we'll be visiting again real soon.
Thank you, Pat.
All right. Thanks, Senator. We'll take this break and have some more Wisconsin news and headlines coming up. This is Up North News Radio.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
Birthdays today include singer Gordon Lightfoot, who turns 84 years old today on this November 17th. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is Up North News Radio. Packers play tonight, if you hadn't heard yet, Thursday Night Football. It's on Amazon Prime. It'll be on local TV in Green Bay and Milwaukee, but Amazon Prime every place else, except for a few bars and restaurants that are part of a deal with DirecTV. Let's see. Right now, we've got... here we go. Oh, Packers are favored by 3 points. That I guess that's what you get for a home game, is you're a 3-point favorite, because they're taking on Tennessee, which is 7-2. They lead the AFC South. The Packers are 4-6. And yet I guess, the odds makers think that it's going to be enough of a toss up that the Packers are 3-point favorites on this. We'll see, especially on short rest after taking on the Cowboys the way that they did earlier this week. As I was, one of the things I did not ask Senator Agard about, because again, it would have sounded like we were just, twisting the knife, shall we say, figuratively speaking, in a state assembly rep. But Janelle Branchon, the Menominee Falls Republican and conspiracy theorist who chairs the Assembly Elections Committee, and has, been on the outs with Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, now finds herself on the outs of her own Republican caucus. Her own Republican colleagues in the Assembly voted last week to bar Branchon from attending a closed caucus session because they no longer trust her. Apparently, a letter from Caucus Chair Rob Sommerfeld, Republican from up here in Bloomer, sent to Branchon on Friday, said the continual issues from the past have led our caucus to lose trust in you, and for this reason, this vote was taken. And again, Branchon has embraced every Trump pillow guy, wackadoodle conspiracy, used the Assembly Elections Committee to provide multiple dog and pony show venues for people that wanted to claim 2020 election fraud that just didn't exist. And she supported a write-in opponent for Robin Voss. Now, Voss beat back the write-in. He won in a general election. He's still the Speaker of the Assembly. What's the old saying? If you fire at the king, you better not miss. And she missed. And so now she is out of caucus. Branchon defended her work in a radio interview, saying that if Voss had wanted her support, quote, he should have earned it like any other candidate. I supported Robin Voss's opponent because I don't feel Robin Voss can unify this party. Last Thursday, Robin Voss had an opportunity to prove me wrong. Instead, he proved me right. Well, that certainly is one way of interpreting that. The other is that the Trumpers in the party, while still basically in control, they're not ruling the party with the iron fist that they used to. Again, don't get me wrong. Robin Voss is still going to be very supportive of Donald Trump if he is the nominee. But prior to that, there are plenty of Republicans who continue to distance themselves from Trump and a potential campaign run for president again, insert laugh track here. But, you know, Molly Beck and Lawrence Andrea from the Journal Sentinel took kind of a head count of all of the Wisconsin Republicans who are putting some distance there. They quote former House Speaker Paul Ryan as saying, "Trump's kind of a drag on our ticket," as he told WISN-TV. There's a Republican retired Republican strategist, Brandon Scholes, a former chair of the state Republican Party, who said, quote, "Donald Trump isn't the future of the Republican Party. He's the past." Who else do we have in here? Congressman Scott Fitzgerald, who is a former state Senate Republican leader and was one of the earliest Republicans to get behind Trump in 2016, you know, instead was focused on Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. Fitzgerald said, I'll just tell you this. The DeSantis thing is real. When I'm in the district, a lot of Republicans, and especially over the last couple of months, it's just been since the election, it's like the DeSantis thing is real. When asked if he was, Fitzgerald would support a 2024 Trump campaign. He went on to say, "I think if you ask a room full of Republicans right now, they might be split. I don't know where they would be, but it's kind of interesting to see that DeSantis now has grabbed so much of the limelight." And let's see, there's Congressman Glenn Grothman, who says, "I'm sure there will be other candidates running. I'll be really interested to see what Ron DeSantis does." There's Brian Stile, Republican in the 1st Congressional District, and Tom Tiffany up north here in the 7th District, where Trump is popular, who both said they don't want to talk about this right now. They just want to talk about, you know, their own elections for leadership in the House of Representatives. And let's see, Andrew Hitt, former state Republican Party chair, said it was time for the party to search for other leaders. He said the Republican Party racked up disappointing election results in 2018, 2020, and now 2022. While we celebrate the policy successes of President Trump, it is time for the party to recognize that new, successful leaders will guide our party forward to victory and once again realize that America is a shining city on a hill. What a nice way of saying hit the road, Jack, and don't you come back no more. You know, Robin Voss has said that Trump is, you know, no longer the face of the party, and on it goes. I mean, it's just person after person who, again, if Trump manages to pull it off and becomes the nominee, they'll get in line. I mean, they just will, unless there's really some kind of a strong, you know, current Republican who mounts some kind of a third party challenge. But who could do that without splitting the Republican vote? You know, let's say that there is a John McCain like figure, and I don't think that it would necessarily be Liz Cheney or Mitt Romney, because, you know, been there, done that with him. But even if there was somebody, I mean, who would pull away Republican votes from people sick of Trump, but also pull away enough Democrats and independent voters to actually have a chance to win the presidency? That's just not the system that we have right now, where any kind of an independent candidate can acquire that level of support, whether it's, you know, Ross Perot back in the 90s, John Anderson back in the 1980s, Ralph Nader, I mean, you name it. The history is just not on the side of those who want to consider an independent / third party run. Would our system be better with multiple parties, multiple strong parties, third, fourth, fifth choices out there? Absolutely. But it's how you get there with, you know, two parties controlling all the rules right now. That is the big question. So it's Republicans and Republicans alone that will have to decide that, can they win if in the primary, when it's just all Republican voters, Trump wins, but in the general, you know, he may not. So I think it's Republicans are going to be doing a lot of messaging to their own voters ahead of the 2024 primaries, saying, you know, think long and hard about the direction you want to go in. Do you really want to go backwards to somebody who's old news? And that takes us to Scott Walker. I ask frequently, why does he insist on being to Twitter what Wile E. Coyote was to Saturday morning cartoons. I mean, you have never, Scott Walker has never had a take that was clever or thought-provoking on Twitter. Instead, he just gets dunked on as people either point out the hypocrisy in something that he said or what his real record is. Every post with him on Twitter is like stepping on a rake and it invites reminders of his awfulness. And he did that earlier this week with this claim he made that all voting and all counting should be done on a single day, even though that's never been the case in this country, going back to its founding, you know, when people traveled in horse and wagon to go vote, and it took weeks for the votes to end up being counted. That's the way it has always been. And absentee voting has become a way to make voting more convenient to more people who have jobs, illnesses, other life conditions that keep them from voting in person altogether on a single day. And that would include Scott Walker himself, who, as people quickly pointed out, he had tweeted only a couple of days earlier about how happy he was to cast his absentee vote early for a Republican slate. He voted absentee this year. Oh, but not just then. Our friend Scott Ross noted that, you know, in the majority of elections since 2015, Scott Walker has voted absentee. So it's not like he's practicing what he preaches here. And it's just one more case of Republicans wanting to, you know, suppress votes when it's convenient for them.
Well, see, here's the thing. Scotty is a busy guy. Like, you know, not everybody has time when you're trying to look around and figure out how many summer homes to get. Maybe not in his case. I'm not sure exactly where he is compared to people like Tim Michaels financially. But, you know, sometimes you just don't have time to go vote on election day as long as you're voting red.
Right? And so, again, we ask if we really want to go backward, not just in people like Trump running, but even in people who are posting on social media, that perhaps former Governor Walker can, you know, find some gainful employment at some point. I have been thinking a lot these past few days when I took some time off, took a nice little vacation in Austin, Texas, kind of cleared the cobwebs and, you know, jotted down a few notes. And I wanted to make sure after, you know, taking some time that, you know, things that I said during the campaign, would they stick? You know, were they said in the heat of the moment, or do I really, you know, do I really want to double down on them, as people like to say? And in this case, I want to talk about candidate debates for our elections. And yeah, it's time. It's time for the traditional candidate debate to go. Now, to be clear, Republicans killed them. Republicans killed these debates by being afraid to be held accountable for their positions, their quotes, their votes, their stunts, their promises. But they probably did us a favor, and it is probably time to build a better mousetrap. Because let's keep in mind what it should be when candidates are up on a public stage, on TV, radio, a public forum, what have you. This is a job interview. If you were up for a job, would it make sense for a potential employer to erect a stage and hold a debate, and you debate somebody else who's up for a job, and then the job is decided by which one of you has the best zinger that the audience applauds at or laughs at? You wouldn't do that. And we need to stop doing that with candidate debates. We need our newsrooms to create a uniform platform and a format that is from now on based in well-researched questions, where you can hold candidates accountable, ask as many follow-ups as necessary to tell the voters where exactly they stand, and if candidates say they won't show up, use that time anyway to highlight the video, the records, like I said, the quotes, the votes, the stunts, the positions, the promises, and say this is what the candidate has put out. And here's what it would mean. And yeah, the candidate's not there, but your job isn't to put on a TV show. Your job is to provide a public service, which you would do by showing the candidate, at least in his or her record, if not there, live on stage. And one more thing, whatever we end up doing with these, no more live audiences. This isn't TV wrestling. We'll take one more break and wrap up our Thursday conversation after this on Up North News Radio.
Every highway seen better days, the morning after blue, from my head down to my shoe. Every highway, me slip away on you.
Have fun with the Spice Girls one more time because of this album going to number one on this date in, oh, whatever the heck it was. What was it, 1998 or something like that? I can't remember how old my girls were, but oh my goodness, we had this on 96. Repeat. Sure, we'll go with, sure, that would make sense. They were 6 and 8 years old at that point, and I mean, they'll still dance to it if I put it on. Not that I'm saying I have the album on my phone or anything. I wouldn't have that. Let's move on to Todd Alba, who's got the 8 to 11 slot that some other guy had before he got moved over to the 6 to 8 in the morning slot. And Todd started his show this Monday while I was away on my post-election break. So this is our first day where our shows are live and back-to-back forever and ever, or at least as long as they'll let us do this. Todd, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, but I am loving what I'm seeing here because something changed while I was away. And I know that Carrie Lake lost her race for governor, but the soft focus has now been put on the camera in the Madison studio. And Todd has now got that Carrie Lake Vaseline on the lens thing going here.
I know.
You look stunning. You look gubernatorial.
Well, it's God, no, it's just, you know, we're working on kind of the set. So, you know, I the Devil's Advocates logo is behind me. And it's like, I'm not that good yet. I'm not worthy of the Devil's Advocate logo. So my face is not on a lens. It's just behind me. So.
Oh, don't sell yourself short. I've caught, you know, Crudy on a bad day, and you know, you're there, and Dom, I've caught him on days when he didn't know what day it was. So, and he would plead guilty to that. So, well, you and I would be capable any time those two want to take their own break to Austin or wherever they go. Now I suppose you didn't really have a break because your show just started this week. So you're like all fresh and ready to charge right into things.
We're set to go. A little tired, you know, but Aaron's been helping out, and Luke's been helping out, and Evan. So, you know, we have a great team here, and that's one of the things that I'm super excited about. Of course, your show has been going for a while and has a great following, and very thankful to be on the team with you and your experience, both as a legislator and in the private sector and in the journalism sector. It's a great combo, right? So I feel very fortunate to be part of the team on Civic Media.
Now, I know you had to do all this on Monday, but we'll do it again for the early morning sure. Listeners who might not have caught that, and do a little bio. As Todd alluded to, we both have worked in the state capitol at about the same time at one point or another. And Todd has the best description. He calls it a mutt resume. Todd, tell us a bit about the mutt resume.
So I was born and raised in Richland Center in Southwest Wisconsin, and got involved in politics at a really young age, at 12 years old, in 1980. I was doing a school project and met our local Republican Party chairwoman, and got sucked in. And Steve Gunderson in the 3rd Congressional District for Congress, and Bob Caston, U.S. Senate, and Ronald Reagan all were running, and they all won. And I thought, well, this is easy. You know, I thought it was great. And little did I know. And so that met Dale Schultz in 1982 when he was running for state assembly, and thus began a long friendship and a long career kind of trajectory with Dale, working for him on and off five different times. He calls me the Billy Martin of the Schultz office, although I was never fired like Billy Martin. But worked for Dale, worked for U.S. Congressman Scott Klug for about 4.5 years until he retired. And then also back in high school, I got involved in radio at WRCO, which is now owned by Civic Media. And I worked for WRCO on and off for about 17 years and also did a communication program at UW-Platteville. So kind of communication, broadcasting, and politics have been my life.
That's awesome. And you do we best describe you as a former Republican staffer or a former Republican or a former staffer who's a sometimes Republican? Where what's your business card say these days?
So when we're trying to think of names for the show, I wanted to call it the Redemption Tour with Todd Allball. but Crudy said no, he just wanted to be called the Todd Allball Show. I think it's fair to say former Republican. You know, I was a Republican staffer for Dale and for Scott. Was the county party chairman of the Republican Party for Richland County on and off for a number of years. I am a twice defeated candidate for state assembly in the Republican Party in 04 and 08. But in 2011, during the voter ID bills that came up in the state Senate, I was in the closed caucus, and Pat knows what that is. Basically, it's a niche that the legislature has carved out, so your county board can't do this or nobody else, but the state legislature could go into a private meeting with the majority of the body and have these private discussions. And they were debating voter ID, and it basically came down to that they were trying to take people's constitutional rights away. Dale walked out of that meeting, told me to stay there, and afterwards I went down to his office and said, I can't do this anymore. And it just became, even this was before Trumpism, but the party had morphed into or become something that no longer represented who I was or what I believed, and so I walked away.
Well, and we call it Trumpism now, but the fact of the matter is it could be fairly given other names, and the one that I would associate with it is Gingrich. You could call it, we're all a bunch of Gingrichists or something, sure. Because, I mean, again, there's no single point, but his reign really marked a change in Republicans, wildly successful in 94, coalescing around a message. But then it was, what happened after that, where you can just kind of see where things have changed in terms of norms and civility.
Yeah, I think, again, as a former legislator yourself, I'm not sure what the Democrat Senate caucus was like, but I can tell you on the Republican side, and I think it kind of started with Scott Jensen and Chuck Kwala back in 1994 at the state level, where basically, maybe not to a T, but there was kind of this edict for new legislators on both sides. You can't even be seen down at the Avenue or a bar around Madison with the other side. Or on the Republican side, they were threatening committee chairmanships. And so it used to be, as you know, that a lot of business got done between legislators over a drink or over dinner. And then suddenly that wasn't allowed anymore.
No. And what a departure. I mean, Madison is so much quieter now. I was there recently, and I've talked to a couple of current legislators. And it's downright sad the way that you can't talk to somebody on the other side anymore for various reasons that we don't need to get into. But I'm sure we'll have plenty of time to talk about this on future shows. What are you going to be talking about today on the Todd Allball Show from 8 to 11?
Well, we have a great guest to start things off at 8:30, Christian Jensen, who is a special envoy to the United Nations for Denmark, is a former Minister of Foreign Affairs for Denmark. And served as the Minister of Treasury for Denmark, been in Denmark politics a long time. We met back in the late 90s when he was part of the German Marshall Fellowship Program, and I was working for Scott Klug, and I've known him for over 20 years. He's an interesting guy. He's going to be joining us live from Egypt, where he is at the UN Conference of Climate Change, and talking to us about that. He was here during the midterm elections as an election observer. So he's going to give us his take on U.S. democracy from a European standpoint, and also talk a little bit about his travels around the world and his take on the Ukraine situation. He's met with Vladimir Putin's foreign secretary, so we've got that. And also Senator Tim Cullen at 10:30 talking about a new civility conference in Madison tomorrow.
Man, I got to step up my game. Todd Allball, good to talk to you. Have a great show.
I lucked out. I have good friends. Thank you, Pat. You're awesome. Thank you.
All right. See you later. Hey, follow me all day. Pat Kreitlow up north on Facebook, Pat Kreitlow on Twitter. Y'all have a great day. We'll see you on Friday.